This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
But those areas probably have got big family groups in them. People have grown up there. They've got their mum and dad there. They've got their brother and sister. And they would be happy to rent there for a long, long time because they've got their family network around them, as opposed to buying a fancy flat on the seafront where you're more likely to attract people with a good income, but those people will go off and buy. They're not going to be long-term renters. So it's thinking about what you actually want from the property and then considering areas that you might have discounted, because actually that might be a really good investment for you with a long-term tenant that will tick over. And, you know, happy days, you've got a tenant that's in there and it's going to maximise, you know, your return.
Welcome to Series 2 of the Property Podcast with Wards and me, Gary Wilson, the weekly podcast where I'll share with you all the latest Kent property news, as well as speaking with industry professionals to offer advice and tips that will hopefully help make your house move journey a little less stressful. Welcome to episode 3 of the Property Podcast with Wards, series 2. Today we are going to be talking about how you can make money from your property. It's the dream, isn't it? With our special guests, Linda Edwards, Thanet Lettings branch partner, and Natasha Burr, who is the regional land manager at Wards. Thank you both for joining us. And we'll start with you, Linda, talking strategies for homeowners in Kent and what they need to be when they're viewing properties as potential investments.
Well, first of all, I think a lot of people think about letting their properties. They've got a nice home, they're moving on, and the, for them, they think, okay, this is great, I don't need to sell my investment, I'm going to keep it. But what they don't see is that it's becoming a business. So they really need to look at it from a compliant point of view and a point of view of actually having a tenant living in their property, and it's going to be safe, it's going to work for them. And so they really do need to buy a lettings expert into their home just to talk through everything. There are so many things that we would look at that a homeowner would never see, from maybe the electrics, the gas, just safety issues that might be in the property, trip hazards, lots of, you know, different bits and pieces to do with current legislation. So really, if you're thinking about doing this, you really do need to take advice from an expert.
Yeah, it seems like it's a real safety net. We've had conversations with your colleagues and others along these same kind of lines, and it really underlines that it is a safety net. It's not a layer on top. It's not like red tape, if you like, when you get professionals involved. It really is.
Yeah,
it's almost like you wouldn't drive a car without having insurance. It's kind of like that. It's just like that backup, that reassurance, that input. They don't maybe think they need it. They've seen TV shows like we all have, and they think they can get stuck in, and it's pretty straightforward. But there's a lot. There's a lot that they don't know about.
No, absolutely. And like you say, people see a house, they see it as an investment. Okay, I can get some rent coming in. It would be a good return for me, a good way of having some money to cover the cost of running the home. But actually, it is a business. I say, and any business has rules and regulations that they have to run by. And it's like having an MOT on your property.
Yeah.
So you need to feel confident that when your tenant moves in, they're going to be safe because you are responsible for them while they're living there.
Yeah. And again, to go to the TV shows that I'm obsessed with, where it's always renovations and doing ups and knocking through and all that kind of stuff. Now, obviously, each property is different, but just to discuss generally the process of renovating a property for profit, what kind of things do people need to think about as they start out on that kind of journey?
Again, get a letting expert in to talk to you, because it's very, very easy to get carried away. Heart and head, separate those. So you need to think about it again as a business opportunity. It's very easy to open a magazine, to walk into a DIY shop and see all the fantastic showrooms and the fashionable things that are happening. But what you really need to consider is how you can add value to your property without overspending and keep it classic and keep it to a standard that is going to be future-proof. So when a tenant does move in, everything's going to be working, everything's going to be in good order, easy to maintain, and also appeal to everybody. Mm. So like I say, the fashionable trends that you see when you walk into a shop, stay away from them. Keep it classic, keep it timeless, because what you want to do is your property to appeal to everybody for a long time, not just for a short period of time, because what you don't want to be doing is in 3 or 5 years' time completely starting the process again, and then obviously you're looking at the money, you're looking at your figures, and it's just not going to work for you.
Again, something I see it's the TV world, but I wonder if it's a thing in real life that you've encountered when the people that are renovating a property, which is their own property, but they're not going to be living there, they kind of forget in the process that they aren't going to be living there, and they do the extras that they would really quite like, let's say marble worktops mm-hmm. instead of generic worktops, which would look almost as nice, certainly would do the job. Those kind of things where people spend probably too much. Is that something you see?
I see that all the time because, like I say, it's very easy to get carried away. It's exciting. You're going shopping, you're buying things for the home, and you obviously have your own personal taste. And to you, your personal taste is what everyone's going to like. It's the best. But actually, it doesn't work like that. And the last thing you want is to present your property to a potential new tenant and them straight away say, oh, okay, but can I move in and change the colour of the wall? What you want is something that someone can move into. It's nice and neutral. They can put their own stamp on it with their soft furnishings. So if they love purple or green, they can put their curtains up, they can put the sofa in with their cushions. But the actual bones of the property is going to work for anybody that views.
Yeah, I always think coloured light bulbs are the future. White everything, get a coloured light bulb, and you can change your mind and change your light bulb fitting easy. The concept of buy-to-let property investment, particularly in the Kent market, what are considerations for prospective investors on that buy-to-let?
So I speak to lots of investors all the time, and usually they have two different views on how their buy-to-let investment's going to work. Some people are looking at it from investing their money and looking for capital growth because maybe they'll keep the property for 10 or 15 years and they'll benefit from when they sell, from the gain in their investment, or they'll be looking at it from a monthly income. So with a monthly income, you could probably buy a less expensive property but get a really good return on it. So your yields are going to be great, certainly more than you'll be earning interest in bank accounts. And for some people, that's how it's going to work. They're going to keep the property forever. It's going to be part of a portfolio. It might be well handed down to their family. So the income is key to them. Other people, like I say, look at it as investing their money to make their money grow. So the monthly income is important, but it's not the most important thing. They're more likely to buy a more expensive property in a great area where the capital growth is going to be excellent over, say, a period of, you know, maybe 10 years or so.
Yeah.
So two different points of view. It really does depend on how you're looking at your investment.
Yeah, and that time scale, obviously, that you're thinking of, obviously, those would change for quite a lot of people as the market moves and as their lives change as well. What are the advantages, what are the challenges as well of renting out rooms in a property?
So
as a way of, rather than a whole property?
Well, you have investors and people will look at the numbers and they think, oh my goodness, I can buy that house for X amount of pounds. I can rent the rooms individually. I'm going to get a fantastic return on a monthly basis from my investment. But with room lets, you have to look at local licensing laws. Every area is different. University towns are different from just maybe a town without a university. And then you have to build into the fact that your rooms might not always be occupied. So if you get your spreadsheet going and you actually look at what you're going to achieve over a year as an income, you might actually find you're better off letting it as one house, because if you build into occupancy levels, you'll find that actually the sums don't really work, and for the extra work involved in actually having a house that you can let in rooms, it might not be so financially great for you as you originally thought it might be.
I imagine if you're doing room by room as well, you've got tenant by tenant, and you know, you could have four or five times the amount of phone calls saying, can you sort this out, please?
Absolutely. That all goes hand in hand. You can have tenants that fall out. You know, you've got to think about the mix in the property. You've got to think about the wear and tear of maybe room lets not being as long term as a normal AST. So you've got maybe furniture that you're replacing or redecorating that you're having to cope with more often than you would if it was just a family let. So yeah, lots of things to consider. The numbers don't always work. It can be a great way to generate an income, but they don't always work. So again, really important to do your homework, get your spreadsheet up and running and look at the figures.
I mean, a lot has changed, I imagine, over the last sort of 10 years as far as what people can find out for themselves. Obviously in every aspect of life, everything's on our phones pretty much now. It's not stuff that was, you know, available. The information for next door, what it sold for, and all that stuff is there. Has that changed a lot from your point of view with the technology and the stuff that people can now come to you and go, well, actually, we know, we've done our research. Does it make it easier for you? Because they generally could, at least, potentially have more information. Or does it make it more difficult?
We are here to give best advice. So I like people that have done the homework because it's nice to have a conversation with people, but also it's dangerous. So I think, again, really need to speak to a lettings expert to actually run your ideas past them. You know, you can read things on the internet. For argument's sake, I had a landlord, they've just bought 23 flats in Margate and we're going to be looking after the properties
like
for them. I like them a lot. But they bought them at auction and there are issues. So like anything you buy at auction, you're taking a big risk.
Yep.
And they phoned me up a couple of days ago in absolute panic, thinking they had to get what's called a selective licence on each property because they've read up, they've looked on the internet, they've done some homework, but actually that licence expired in 2021. So they don't actually have to do that. So again, you know, you can do your research, but research can be as advantageous as it can be dangerous.
Yeah.
So just run it past an expert. Make sure that, you know, you've got your ducks in a row before you actually jump into anything.
Yeah. And when it comes to thinking about, right, choosing a property. So this is, you know, going back a step, kind of. So you think, I'd quite like to do all this. It sounds great. What are people looking for? What should people look for in a potential property for the potential profit or making the most out of it, whether it's renovation or buy to let or other investment strategies? What if I was wanting to get into this market, what kind of property would I be looking for and how would I go about it, really?
Again, it's to do with whether it's a long-term investment or you're looking for a monthly income. Most people are buying buy to lets because the yield that they'll have is better than interest on that investment in a bank account. But there are so many considerations. So you need to think about the area. You need to think about the type of tenant the property is going to attract. If you're looking at a long-term investment, it would be nice to have someone that's going to stay a long time, not a property in an area where renters are more transitional, they come and they go. So lots and lots of different aspects to consider. I deal with lots of investors all the time, so it's about talking to people, finding out what their plan is, what they want to gain from that investment, and then talking to them about the type of properties they should be looking at, areas they should be looking at. So for argument's sake, there might be areas in towns where people might not necessarily consider them to be the best area, but those areas probably have got big family groups in them. People have grown up there, they've got their mum and dad there, they've got their brother and sister, and they would be happy to rent there for a long, long time because they've got their family network around them, as opposed to buying a fancy flat on the seafront where you're more likely to attract people with a good income, but those people will go off and buy. They're not going to be long-term renters. So it's thinking about what you actually want from the property and then considering areas that you might have discounted, because actually that might be a really good investment for you with a long-term tenant that will tick over. And, you know, happy days, you've got a tenant that's in there and it's going to maximise, you know, your return.
Yeah. And again, that's obviously where your experience and skills will come into helping people make those choices.
Completely. A lot of people don't think about the type of tenant.
Yeah.
They just think about the property and the pennies. They don't think about the type of person it's going to attract and what's actually going to work for them.
When it comes to the pennies, when it comes to budget, is there any sort of golden rules, really? Is there anything that people need to have in mind as they get into that, like the financial side of it, when they're looking at the figures and the ins and out columns?
Well, generally, people want to maximise their investment. Of course they do. That's the whole point of buying a buy-to-let property. And when you look at areas, less expensive areas will give you a better investment return than buying somewhere in a slightly, you know, more affluent area. So again, you really, really need to think about what you want from your property. There's no do's and don'ts. It's all to do with what's going to work for you. And again, that's why a lettings expert would be able to talk you through the pros and cons, or maybe let you think outside the box a little bit about something you might not have considered, because that may work for you.
Mm. You talk about there being no do's and don'ts, and obviously every example and every situation is different. But just to finish up with, I know that your number one golden rule would be talk to an expert. That much is clear and quite right. What would a number two golden rule be? Or what might we have missed here that you really think someone getting into this, what would your number one piece of advice be?
Number one piece of advice would be to think about why you're investing your money into property. And if it's because you're looking for a good yield, a good investment return, then you really need to run the numbers. So you could buy a property that's in a lot, need of repair, needs a lot of work doing to it. But actually, when you build that into the costs of the purchase, you might find that that's not such a good investment, because your money in the bank would have actually returned you more income on that particular year than actually buying that property. So again, it's about thinking about how it's actually going to work for you financially. Because, you know, property at the end of the day is an investment. I used to be an accountant, so I look at my job from a money point of view and how your investment's going to work for you. So you must always look at income, expenditure, and actually what you're going to gain from it. Again, heart and head, it's very, very easy to get carried away with buying a really pretty property on the seafront or in the countryside. But actually think about what you've got to do to get that property to the market, who it's going to attract when the market, you know, actually goes live on the market, and the type of people that are out there, how much it's going to actually give you as a yield, and your long-term plans. So there's so many things to think about with lettings.
Yeah.
It's not just about, oh, that looks great, I'll buy that and I'll let it. You really, really, really need to drill down into the detail. You know, it's a big investment. Property is usually the biggest investment people make in their life. And if this is a secondary property or your third or your fourth, you really just need to think about what you're doing.
Yeah.
So easy to get carried away, but actually just take a step back, think about it, look at your spreadsheet. I love a spreadsheet, but you really, really need to just think about what you're doing. And again, it's all about the money at the end of the day. It's got to work for you financially. And if it doesn't, think about something else.
There you go. It's all about the money, honey. Thank you for sharing your expertise. Thank you for sharing your passion.
As Kent's local independent estate agent, Wards utilise years of experience and expertise to promote your property in the best possible light to the largest possible audience. For more information, receive an online valuation in less than 30 seconds or book an in-person appraisal of your property with us today, head over to wardsofkent.co.uk to find out more about our unique approach.
So welcome back, and here's the next big question. How can I calculate the value of my land, and how can land agents maximise that value? Natasha, you're the person to ask this one. Remind us of your position at Wards.
Hi, my name's Natasha. I am the Senior Land Manager for Wards and look after everything that's related to land and development. In answering your first question in terms of valuing land, the first thing I would say is, most importantly, you would want to speak to an expert. The reason for that is every single site we deal with is completely unique. There is a very old expression of, for example, in land valuation, that a third is the way that land is typically valued. I can absolutely assure you that that no longer applies, although you might hear it from the people down the pub and such like. But there's a lot more to it than that.
Can I just ask what a third is for people that don't know, like me?
So typically a third refers to the way that the land is segmented into value. So one third of that would be going to the landowner, a third of it is developer profit, and a third of it is the build cost.
Okay, but that's not the case, you're saying, necessarily.
It's definitely not the case, because that would imply that each landowner would receive 33%. And when you are valuing land, obviously it depends on the type of opportunity and many, many factors, but it's not as straightforward as that. The other thing that is very land-dependent is it's a developer-led industry, and in order to maximise the value, the best thing you could do is by introducing the most appropriate developer to each individual site that you're working on. So, for example, if you're working on a specific area in Kent, you want to make sure that you are introducing a developer who is very au fait with the planning system in that area, who has good relationships with the council and things. So it's a developer-led valuation, essentially. Each developer also, they will have their own set of criteria as to how they would ascertain what the land value would be, in terms of their build costs, in terms of the profit they need to derive, and lots of different factors. So to go back to the sort of third rule, it simply doesn't work. But traditionally, it is something that used to be very much spoken about. The other thing to sort of note is when we look at land and maximising as land agents how we can get the optimal value out of a land opportunity, the first thing we'll do is see if it can be a residential scheme. But what's important to note is that doesn't always produce the highest land value. It will always be our first consideration as land agents, especially sort of the nature of how awards works. But if there are other alternative options that we can consider to derive a higher land value, that would include options such as retirement or care, or even commercial, then we'll look at those opportunities as well.
So your job in that, so where normally, let's call it, say, a normal estate agent would be the person in between a buyer and seller of a property, and they would look for what their buyer is looking for, and they would know, they would have a list of potential buyers in their minds and on the sheet. You're the same with developers, and you think, oh, I know who's looking for something that this really fits the bill. So you're still that middle person. You're just kind of brokering that deal and setting them up for, you know, the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So our role is to introduce the most appropriate developer for any site. The difference you'll find with land is most of our work takes place in an off-market capacity. And one of the crucial differences as well is we are paid by our buyer, our retained client, the developer, rather than the seller. So there are some differences. And as I say, a lot of our work kind of goes on an off-market opportunity. And therefore, we're contracted with the developer. That being said, our goal is always to optimise the land value, and probably the most interesting part to this is in a transaction there are three parties, so the landowner, the developer and the agent, and what's crucial to recognise is we're all working for the same goal, and that is to get the best land value. It's in everyone's interest, so as opposed to when you're selling a property and the seller wants to get the highest value and the buyer wants to get it for the lowest value, where we're different is everyone is seeking to get the most, it's called the gross development value, the GDV, and the higher the GDV is per site, the higher the land value will be. So when we're sitting down with landowners, it's really crucial that they have a good grasp that that is the main benefit, and it's our job as land agents to introduce someone who can optimise the land, get the best sort of GDV out of it, and that will derive them the highest land value. So we're all kind of working in a team essentially for the same goal.
When it comes, you know, it's about comedy, they say it's all in the timing, and when it comes to property as well, we know, as just regular people, we see markets and going up and down, and we know if we're buying and selling or just trying to pay the mortgage, things change. When it comes to planning applications, is there a best time for that? Is there a best person to talk to and submit to? What's the deal there?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. Timing-wise, there's no right or wrong time, frankly speaking, but one thing that is an important part of it is what's going on in the local planning authority, which we sort of refer to as the LPA, and that's understanding where there is essentially a requirement for housing. It's quite a complex system, but it's essentially governed by something called the National Planning Policy Framework, and that sort of dictates onwardly how many houses need to be built in certain specific areas. And what we find is when a planning application has the best opportunities in some respect of getting a consent is where there is a shortage of housing in that particular local planning authority. So again, when it comes to selecting a correct developer for a site, one of the key things is having a developer who understands what's happening in that local authority and making sure they're best suited. There are also different ways of sort of structuring deals. So some developers purchase land via something called an option agreement and run their own planning, whilst others will purchase sites that have a consent in place already. So the best person would be the one who has the best opportunity to get the planning permission granted. And in terms of timing, I would say as an agent, we will look at what's happening in sort of the wider area and understand particularly where there is a housing shortage.
We hear about land separation. So for private individuals, how can that make you money? What's land separation and how can it make you a few quid?
Okay, so essentially this is, say you have a house that sits on quite a large piece of land. What you'd be looking to do is perhaps subdivide your garden. You can then put it onto a separate title deed. But one day that separate title may well get development rights. Or you can perhaps, slightly more complex, but you can use it as a ransom strip. So, for example, if you own a big house or, you know, the garden and you've got land at the rear, you might section off a piece of your garden, put it under a separate title. So, therefore, if development was to happen at the rear of your building or dwelling, you would be effectively in the way of that development taking place, known as this ransom strip. And with that, there is a sum of money that would need to be paid to you in order to overcome that sort of legal situation. What I would say is when you are splitting up your title and if you are fortunate enough to be able to put a development into your garden, it's one thing to be aware of, not to go into it in too much detail, but there is an implication on capital gains tax. So just something to be mindful of.
as far as Kent goes, and people wanting to invest, are there specific areas, specific neighbourhoods that certainly at the moment, I'm sure it changes, you know, quite quickly over time, but at the moment that offer better opportunities for investment, and what affects that?
So there's a few key things that would affect it. One part of it is looking at the resale values in the area. So once the development's been built out, you know, what is the value of the house that would therefore be sold? And we will look at things such as the price per square foot for the sale price. Where we see slightly lower price per square foot, it can make the development opportunity a little bit more tricky. As we've touched on already, we want to be able to find opportunities in areas where the councils haven't hit their housing delivery targets. That can be a key factor. And the other main thing really is the constraints in an area. So an area that, or a particular, you know, specific postcode which hasn't got flooding risks, it's not in Greenbelt or AONB, which is Area of Outstanding National Beauty, or specifically, for example, if you take a specific example of Ashford, we had something called the Stodmarsh Nutrient Neutrality. So in areas that have these sort of constraints, we have to be mindful that whilst some of it can be overcome through the planning, some of them will automatically mean the planning will not be possible at all, and therefore no further opportunity.
Yeah, and so obviously all kinds of research comes into play there. So what role does market research and analysis play in getting, the best bang for your buck, really?
Going back to the previous point, I think that the first thing to mention is the price per square foot, and we work extremely closely with our new homes department, who are very, very good at what they do in wards, and we will lean on them so that we can ascertain what the gross development value is. So they will look at what the end product is going to be. They will give us a value. We can then start to work backwards to calculate a land value, and they're using all the market intelligence data that they have access to, which is very comprehensive in wards. They have a very strong track record. They know sort of their areas inside out. So that and the market intelligence that's always being researched within our company, they will pull upon that data. And from that, we will then be able to establish a land value and also look at the achievable values of the dwellings that will be built. So the whole thing ties up in a very compact sort of loop. We're a very synchronised land and new homes department. And the one sort of won't work without the others. So, we're very lucky that we have such a strong team.
Yeah. Everything you've spoken about, you know, it's all things that have to be done. It's a big checklist of things and ideas and all things that have to come together. And obviously, listening from the outside, if you're thinking about this might be something I want to do, any aspects of this, each of those things also sounds like a potential stumbling block. So let's have a success story, just so people go, this is how good it can be. Well, let's make some money, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the first thing I'd say is, yes, there are lots of sort of restraints and things we consider, but, when you get it right, it can be very profitable. And as I said, our main goal is to optimise the land value. So if I was to look at a case study recently from a site we've done near Whitstable, one of the agents from our wards offices went to the site, and, you know, we have throughout our firm, we have over 100 offices across the southeast of England. So they are trained by the land department. They know what opportunities to look for. So if they go to a property and see that that the house is sat on a large piece of land, or perhaps the landowner's indicated that a developer's been in touch, the first thing they do will give us a call. Of course, the owner wants to be consented to sort of engage with the land department. And we will start to look at and see if we can help fulfill an opportunity there. So this lovely house, quite an old house, and that's quite important to note, and I explain why, but it was sort of half falling apart, but on a beautiful site. The manager of the branch went out to visit it, could see that there was quite a lot of space around the house, got in touch with us. So the property sits on just over an acre of land. It's set in the settlement boundary. Settlement boundaries basically indicate where dwellings or villages start and finish, essentially, and they are subject to change. But that's quite a complex sort of system, which goes through a very long 5 to 10 year process. But it sat in settlement boundary, which for us indicates that it probably has a stronger chance of gaining a planning planning commission. So we were introduced to the executors of the property, and with their agreement we introduced a number of our developer clients who were very familiar in the local area. That was all done sort of off market. We filtered through all the interest. We put together a number of proposals. We had three strong options for the owner. Planning has been submitted now under an option agreement with the chosen developer. And I mentioned about the age of the building earlier. What was lovely about this scheme is, and one of the reasons the executor was keen, is the developer is looking to restore the existing building to its former glory whilst building six very carefully designed houses in and around the grounds. So not to give exact figures, but the executors will be receiving three times the value of the house. So when the manager went round to value it, you know, for argument's sake, it was 500,000. The land value, which they will now receive, is 1.5. So with our involvement, we've been able to triple the value. And, you know, for the executors, this is sort of their pension fund. So it's made a massive, massive difference to them. And, you know, this is what we're doing day in, day out, looking for opportunities, trying to create sensitive developments. You know, that there is a shortage of housing. There's no escaping that. Houses do need to be built. But it's about finding the right opportunities and bringing in the right developers. So that was a very good example of how it works from start to finish. You know, using our network of estate agents, introducing the land department, going through the process that we follow in terms of securing the best developer, and gaining a positive planning consent on a really beautiful site.
Actually, you talk about an old house prompts me to ask about moving forward. Obviously, we've got a new government in place and things change all the time. You know, there's lots of graphs going up, down and left and right. So how do you see, looking at what you look at that a lot of us won't be looking at or can't see, how do you see the future of property development then for people that are perhaps thinking about dabbling in some way?
So, I mean, we are, as a land department and as a business, we're sort of cautiously optimistic at the moment. The last few years, obviously coming out of COVID, we had build costs going sky high, interest rates went up. It became a very difficult landscape, really, for developers to operate within. With the new government, what we are already seeing, and it was one of the first things that they sort of raised within 5 days of coming into power, was that they were looking to review and update I referred to it earlier, the planning framework, the national policy and framework of planning. So they have made some amendments already, and it was really critical. And the first thing they did, they previously, that the government, they gave a bit more power to the local authorities, and that they said, you know, you can decide how many houses gain a consent in your sort of constabulary. But what we've got now is a government that is dictating, like it used to be to the councils, how many houses need to be built in each authority. And that will be able to kickstart some of the development that's been stuck in a bottleneck effectively. So that's been one thing that's really going to be a positive for a lot of developers where they've had planning stuck for a long time. There's now an obligation really on the local planning authorities to deliver consents to offer the housing. They've also sort of introduced this grey belt land, which, you know, it's not a case of carving up beautiful countryside. It will never be that. The green belt is there for a reason, and that won't really be interfered with. What it means is taking land that sits in the green belt that might be like an old car park or a rundown building, something that actually needs to see some change, and looking into how that could be better utilised, maybe through a development. But first priority will always be to try and develop on brownfield sites. So looking in towns or on the edge of settlements, looking at those opportunities. As I say, it's never about sort of putting large developments all over the countryside. And where you do see them spring up, they've been through a 5 to 10 year process of promotion. They don't just sort of appear overnight. It's gone through a very long process, which is probably a conversation for a different day. It's quite a complicated system, very detailed actually, and there are special developers called promoters who work on those sort of sites. The other thing that, from a resale perspective, obviously we've seen the interest rate, albeit marginal, it has adjusted and has dropped ever so slightly. And what that means, I think, it just brings a little bit more confidence into the market in terms of buyers. So when the development has been completed, you know, there will be people out there who are ready to purchase those houses. And as far as we can see, you know, it does look like the forecast is that those interest rates will continue to come down, albeit gradually. So that's a really positive. The overall signs are pretty good. Property prices, it's very hard to sort of understand which way they're going to go. Obviously, reports are saying that they will go up 2% this year. It's very, very localised. You know, everywhere's a microclimate, so you can't say 2% everywhere. Some places might actually have benefited from higher rises. Some might have dropped slightly. But I think how we overall see it as a business, as a land department, and certainly when we're conversing with our developer clients, we feel more optimistic. We might be turning a corner in terms of some of the tough times that have been. The build costs have sort of stabilised. They're still a lot higher than they were prior to COVID, but it's become the new norm. So all in all, I think we're really positive. The government seems to be making the right sort of noises at the moment in terms of what they're going to do. And it's, I guess, a case of seeing if they action them.
Well, bright times ahead, it sounds like, which is exactly what we wanted to hear. So as if you couldn't tell from our podcast, it's always a good idea to consult with a financial advisor, solicitor, or estate agent, or all of the above, to help you navigate the home buying process and the letting process as well, and answer any additional questions that you might have. Thanks again to our special guests on this episode, Linda Edwards, Thanet Lettings Branch Partner, and Natasha Burr, Regional Land Manager at Wards. Thanks both for sharing your insights and expertise with us today. You can check all our previous episodes at im-listening.co.uk or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out the Property Podcast with Wards next week. See you then. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Thanks for listening to the Property Podcast with Wards. If you'd like more information on the subjects that we've covered in this week's episode, just head over to the Wards website at wardsofkent.co.uk, or you can follow us on our social media channels. You can check out our latest episodes at im-listening.co.uk or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
This has been an IM Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.